I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me up big homegrown tomatoes.
Well, friends, it's Thursday afternoon, and so we're happy to say it is time for In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Boyarsky. He's coming to us on the line from Juneau, before we dive into that, we're going to say thank you to the Flower Farm for underwriting this program. They've got fuchsia baskets available with pansies and violas blooming. They accept orders for custom baskets, hanging bags and planters, bouquet subscriptions, and gift certificates are available, and, hanging bags, planters. That's at the Flower Farm. They're open every day, 10 to 4, except Wednesday at 6 Rory's Road, Pappy's Landing, and right in town, Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, in the Garden Center behind Love and Matters. All right, hey. All right, Ed, have we got you on the line?
I'm here, Arne.
All righty. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's a beautiful day in Petersburg. I hope you're getting some nice weather up there for, because there's, of course, lots of work to do. It's planting season.
It is indeed. Yeah, it's the weather is variable, shall we say. there's some sucker holes that I can see out here. Got rain down coming through Rock Bay. And then this week, Friday and Saturday and Sunday are supposed to be pretty wet. We've got a big plant sale coming up at Safeway for a big sale for all of the different gardening groups and such.
Oh.
So we'll hope the weather is better. But in the meantime, it is, overall, the weather is better. It's warmer.
Yeah.
And more encouraging. And it is definitely planting season. So we can talk about some of that.
Yeah, let's. Yeah. What are you doing today? What's going in the ground?
So I've got, yesterday I just got some more. I've got cauliflower and Brussels sprouts and broccoli plants in, and then I planted seeds of more broccoli and a couple different kinds of cauliflower, or cabbage rather, in the same bed, spaced out, and those seedlings then when they come up, I'm planning to thin them out, and then those, the extras, I'll carefully dig them and move them to still another box for a little later harvesting. And, of course, the key thing with all of the cabbage family crops is protecting them from the, among other things, the dreaded root weevil.
Yeah.
Root maggot, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And so immediately upon planting this stuff, I make sure it covered up with Remay horticultural fabric or row cover fabric. But I'm doing some more stuff because it seems like the little rascals will sneak in anyway. Mm. So I'm doing a couple of more barriers and others. So I got, when I was south, I got some predatory nematodes for some neighbors, and we split those. I'm going to water those into the soil, and they're supposed to be good against the larva of the root maggot, among other things.
Oh.
We'll see, because they're also kind of temperature dependent. So with our soil stays too cool, they may not be as active as we might like.
Gotcha.
So more barriers. I have already spread some diatomaceous earth around each plant as I go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will do some more over where the seeds were planted. And also, yesterday was a big day for my annual haircut. So at the barber, I got a bag of hair, also, cut hair to put around each plant.
Oh.
Hopefully, again as a barrier, but also against slugs, because cut hair is very sharp, as you may remember from, the feelings of the prickly stuff on your neck.
Sure.
So I've used that in the past, even around strawberries, as a mulch and a slug barrier. So I am hoping all of those together improve the odds of my cabbage and cauliflower and other assorted stuff making it to maturity without being chewed, the roots being chewed up by the root maggots.
I like it. That's bold. You know, I couldn't help but chuckle to myself just now as I was picturing, like, if you have a guest over to the garden and they're viewing the strawberries, like, wow, how are your strawberries so pest-free?
Then yeah, they see, right, like, right. Yeah, my, we don't have my, any nasty little slugs chewing into the fruits.
And then they see a bunch of hair sprouting.
We can hope that works. And there's other stuff that people use, again, as barriers.
Yeah.
Some of them may include crushed shells.
Right.
Which are often used in, again, as a barrier. So if you go to some beach where there's a lot of them, then those can work. Again, you put kind of a layer, maybe a half inch thick by, say, 4 or 5 inches across underneath the plant.
Mm-hmm.
Some folks may cut pieces, and they recommend this, cut pieces of tar paper, like a tar paper square, 6 inches in across, and cut a slit in it with a little circle that you can slip around the base of the plant. Again, another barrier.
Oh.
Or even something also I've used, a suggestion was using aluminum foil. And again, you put that around the plant and kind of crumple it around there, as another barrier. And you can put a little bit of sand on top of it if you need to, to hold it down. The problem with that, at least, the year I did that, was that I did find slugs underneath the aluminum foil.
Right.
So, you know, you got a barrier of one sort, and again, I suspect underneath tar paper, the slugs would hide out there too.
Right.
So it's an ongoing battle. Let's put it that way.
So when you're thinking about these barriers, these are kind of to make it basically impossible for little maggots to like scoot across the ground to get to the plant. Is that right?
Well, actually, to prevent the adult is a small fly, like a small house fly.
Yeah.
Which then once they emerge and they overwinter in the soil.
Right.
That's part of the reason why we want to rotate our crops.
Yeah.
We're not planting in the same beds where they are and they're just waiting to emerge. Once they get enough warmth, enough heating degree days to emerge. And then the adults fly around looking for another tasty meal, another cabbage plant or radish plant or turnip or rutabaga or broccoli, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea here is prevent them from landing and laying their eggs at the bases of those plants, where once the eggs hatch out, the little maggot goes down into the soil, finds a root, and starts to chew it up.
Gotcha.
And
so
the results, you may have seen them if you pull a radish or a turnip or a rutabaga that's been infested, that you'll see the tracks, the holes in the... Usually it's in the outer part of them, so you can kind of peel it off. But again, normally you want it to look nice and have nice color on the radishes and all.
Yeah.
And with other plants, you may notice it with something like kale, cabbages, cauliflower, broccoli, that in the summertime, especially on a warm, sunny day, you look down a row of these plants, and you will see that some of them are wilting. And again, that's because their roots have been chewed by the root maggots. So then the best thing you can do is go out gently, pull up the plant that you have there, and if you can scoop up some of the soil and dispose of that in a garbage bag or something, hopefully you're going to get the little root maggots which are there. And you can usually see them. I mean, they'll be up to about a quarter inch long, little white to gray maggots chewing on the roots. So try to get rid of them as much as you can.
Right. So if you've had pests like that in the soil, is it best just to get rid of that soil? Or you were saying crop rotations. Are there things that we can plant instead in those beds that are not at risk?
Yeah, you can use... So if you have dedicated, you know, if you've got enough boxes, hopefully... You know, you have one box that this year, this is going to be the cabbage family crops of various sorts.
Yeah.
And then you have some potatoes in a box and garlic and carrots and lettuce and Swiss chard and beets. So those things are not susceptible to this pest.
Mm-hmm.
So you can switch again. So next, you rotate the crops. Ideally, you aim for, if we can, about a 3-year rotation. Between planting the same thing again.
Right.
There are, I mean, as far as root maggots go, there's also onion root maggots, which attack onion plants, which would include the onion sets. You know, if you buy the onion sets, little miniature onions in the store, and plant those to hopefully get big onions or green onions. And they will attack leeks also, and they will attack shallots. So again, similar protection for those, you know, using the fabric and other assorted barriers. The onion maggot doesn't attack the cabbage plants and vice versa, but the results are the same.
Yeah.
You end up with a rotten bulb, a soft bulb,
right,
under the ground. And again, you'll often see that the plant itself is rather sickly, isn't as big and healthy as the uninfested ones next to it, potentially.
Mm-hmm. And is garlic safe from that onion?
Normally, garlic is. I don't know if it's because of the particular chemicals that they have in it. I have hardly ever found garlic infested with that. Though there's a couple of other pests that are fairly rare, but can be seen in garlic sometimes. There are some even smaller mites and nematodes, not good nematodes, which can affect garlic too. And then again, from that garlic, my garlic, that which is up and growing nicely, but I see that some of them are rather dwarfed or distorted little plants.
Mm-hmm.
So I will probably very soon, probably within the next week or two, actually start going through them and pulling out those suspicious-looking plants. They don't look healthy.
Mm.
So I'm going to pull them out, and again, I'll try to get some soil out, maybe get out the magnifying glass to check to see if that's what's happening, that they are infested with some garlic mite.
Huh. Yeah, get those out of there. Hmm. Well, those are good things to think about. Crop rotation, especially as people are planting, you know, this week, and, you know, I'm sure some stuff's already planted, but I see a lot of beds as I walk around.
Yeah, and again, think about planting both seeds and transplants, if you're so lucky as to have them, or say if you buy some lettuce plants or Swiss chard plants to put in, and then if you plant seeds at the same time, again, that can lengthen your season.
Right.
Staggered plants
harvest
that you transplanted, those are the ones you're going to get to eat first, and then once you get those out, then you have more of a crop to follow.
Nice.
So you can stretch out the season.
So looking ahead for when we do that in our beds, is it wise? Okay, so say I've done that with spinach or kale. Once there's like a harvestable plant, and then I've got some starts coming up from seed, do I want to pull all the way out the plant that I'm harvesting leaves off of to give more space and more nutrients, or what do I want to do there?
Maybe and maybe not.
Yeah.
Again, with something like lettuce or Swiss chard, you can harvest individual or several of the largest leaves and leave the plant in the ground for a while longer, assuming that it's not bolting, which will happen. Certainly with spinach, I mean, I have spinach that's bolting already in my greenhouses, so we're eating it as fast as we can.
Yeah.
Because you can't stop them from bolting. You know, once the days are, we've got over 16 hours of daylight, so which is what triggers bolting.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, with some of the other plants, at least when they're younger and not bolting, you can pinch off the outer leaves, use those in your salads or wherever you're going to, and leave the plant to continue to grow and produce new leaves to a point. And then that's where, again, if you're doing some planning ahead, you could also, as well as you could be planting some additional seeds indoors for transplanting into those places, those beds or rows where you have harvested the whole plant, since it's grown up enough that it may be bolting too. So again, that's all part of the planning for our gardens, assuming that you've got space and time and more seeds to be able to replace them with.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's good stuff to think about. I like that. Plant your starts and seeds in the same beds and just work the system that way. Double it up.
And then the other thing is, of course, it's time. Finally, the ground is warming so that we can get ready to plant carrots and beets and some of the other stuff that likes a little bit warmer soil.
Yeah.
And again, I still use, however, the Rime, the horticultural fabrics, on top of those. And I don't have a pest. There are pests for them down south, but not here yet. Mm. I mean, that may change. But that fabric does help hold a few extra degrees of warmth. Mm-hmm. And that can help those plants grow just a little bit faster. The lettuce, too. I mean, as tiny as they are, you know, that can help them grow a little better. The other, again, as far as a couple more tips for seeding, if you're not growing pelleted seed so that you can carefully space the seed out nicely, then you're just, you know, have to plan for doing some thinning. But you can also eat the thinnings as you go.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing, again, for those really tiny seeds, I'll make my rows and kind of firm the little trench. Sometimes I'll just use a piece of broomstick. That's, since I've got 4-foot-wide boxes, I've got a piece of broomstick that's about 45 inches long, or even just a shovel handle or hoe handle, to make those trenches that I firm in, sprinkle my seeds in the trench, and then I'll sprinkle some vermiculite on top of that. And the nice thing about, as opposed to covering them with soil, the nice thing is that the vermiculite is much easier for the little seedlings to push up through to reach the light. Compared to, it's kind of hard to carefully, thinly sprinkle the soil that you may have on top of your tiny carrot seeds and such.
Right. Yeah, right. Because there's that rule of thumb that you had mentioned the other day where the size of the seed is, what was that, as far as the
basically
amount
one to
of
two
soil.
Times the size of a seed. If you've got something like a pea seed, say that's a quarter inch in diameter, you can plant it, you can cover it with one to two diameters of soil, so a quarter inch to a half inch of soil over the top of them.
Right.
Firm it down, and then you got to hope that and make sure that the once they sprout, or that they don't get washed out, so that you know, crows and blue jays and other assorted stuff pick those up.
Right.
But again, that's where something like the lettuce seed or carrot seed, which is very tiny, you can sprinkle very lightly with that vermiculite, so it's much easier for them to come out.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's hard with sandy, if you've got some nice sandy soil, nice good drained soil, nice as it may be, again, it's kind of hard to sprinkle it on fairly evenly and not pack it down too much to slow the germination of those seeds.
I feel like I have definitely made that mistake before where I plant seeds and I've just done them too deep. And either they don't come up at all or they come up like weeks after I thought they were going to, and it's just the strongest of the strong.
You know, there's a certain amount of energy in each seed for it to grow, to germinate, and get above the ground before they can start making food from the, you know, their green leaves and the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So if they use up all their energy trying to push up through the soil, then they may not survive that.
Yep.
That's why the planting depth is fairly critical.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that is a really good tip, especially this week when people are doing that double combo there, planting their starts and some seeds in those beds. It's warm enough to do it, and the timing will work out just great. Just don't bury them too deep.
Right. Again, other things, it's a great time to be planting trees, bare root trees and others.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing just as soon as I'm off the phone with you.
Oh, yeah.
Going out to plant some memorial trees out at the Shrine of St. Therese and stuff. And the key thing with those, with the bare root trees, again, you don't have to dig a very deep hole for them, but you got to get them in and get them covered up nicely in some hopefully loose, well-drained soil. But you, again, because they aren't well anchored, you should have some stakes and to help support that tree until it does get itself well rooted into the soil. So usually I figure 2 summers.
Mm.
By next summer, a year from now, plus a few months, I normally will take those stakes out by that time. They should have grown out into the surrounding soil. So think about that too when you're planting trees. the other good thing about having stakes there, that kind of helps remind you not to get too close with the lawnmower, the weed whacker, mm-hmm. or the dog, or other sort of things. Try not to, don't tie up the dog too close, so the dog gets tangled up around the newly planted trees. That doesn't do them much good either.
That is a good point. And that kind of brings me to a question that got called in earlier today. It was a fellow who has been, he's excited about a nursery in Hoonah. That's, maybe it's called Gang Creek Nursery from Rob Bishop over there in Hoonah, who is, there's a lot of folks getting trees from this nursery and hoping that they'll survive. I'm surprised how many trees this fellow who called in described. He said he's got 15 apple trees and cherry trees right now, and
yeah.
He's got more coming in. And he was looking for kind of general recommendations when folks are starting out with trees, like about fungicides, insect sprays, fertilizing. So when you're adding trees to your property or your garden for maybe the first time, especially now that there's a nursery up here that's kind of striving to have kind of more northern acclimated fruit-bearing trees.
Yep. Yeah, I'm familiar with him. I've talked to him, and in fact, I suspect he has been at our plant sale the day before Mother's Day plant sale in the past. I suspect he may be there again this Saturday. And he is growing. He grafts his own and is growing them in some. They're kind of a fabric pots, which are very sturdy.
Mm-hmm.
So he hauls them over, brings a truckload of them over to sell. And I don't know if he's got a website or what exactly he has. Mm-hmm. But he is growing them on, he buys the rootstocks, and they are a hardy rootstock. They usually tend to be standard, or the larger, they will lead to having larger trees.
Mm-hmm.
But they are also hardier trees because of that.
Mm.
The ones that I normally sell are grafted down south and grown for a year or sometimes 2 years on usually semi-dwarf rootstocks.
Gotcha.
The advantage of that is that you can get a few more trees in a smaller space. The disadvantage is that you do have to you have to take better care of them. You have to, like I said, staking the trees is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of them, especially if you get more dwarf trees, they need to be staked for their whole life. So that's kind of, that's looking at using either a sizable treated poles or posts, or steel posts even, that they are supported by. So that's a difference. Semi-dwarf trees will tend to bear fruit earlier. The full-size trees will take longer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, basically, I grew up back in the Midwest climbing some of these trees. You know, we'd get three or four or five of the neighborhood kids up in a tree, and we'd sit up there, eat apples, or throw apples at each other or something.
Yeah.
Various entertainment that we had in the summertime and fall.
Sure.
So, but anyway, he's doing a good job. I've seen the trees, and I know folks are buying them, and certainly, depending on variety. Variety is important to choose. I highly recommend scab-resistant varieties, so it's worth, if you get a list from him, see which ones those are,
mm-hmm.
because scab is our biggest problem in Southeast, mm-hmm. as far as diseases go, to prevent. So, if you get a tree that gets scab, then you have to spray fungicides, which is a challenge in our wet climate. So that's the issue. Pests, we don't have too many pests, luckily. Well, I take that back. I mean, we've got deer. Some places have moose. I mean, bears like the apples a lot and do damage to the trees. Porcupines also. So there are the bigger pests, not so much the insect pests. Although there's a couple of tiny ones that we're still yet to identify, that one of which may be apple maggots, which again are a challenging pest to deal with.
Hmm. So we have a caller, and I'm going to put them on just in case they're the person who called me to get this question started. Are you there? Hello, caller.
I am.
Hi there. Is this Andy?
No, it's not. It's Dave.
Oh, Dave. Hey. Here, I'm going to put you back on the quiet mode for a second. I thought maybe you were the fellow who had called in with this question. Although, are you thinking about trees as well?
I'm thinking about roadies.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Okay. Well, let's let's stay on the line.
Go ahead. Finish your conversation about trees.
All right. Sounds good, Dave.
Okay.
Okay. So so with the fungicides. So okay. Fertilizing.
I mean,
these,
as far as cheap fungicide, if you're going to spray one, something that's cheap and safe. Is, I think we've talked about this before, baking soda.
Yeah.
And so it kills fungus quite nicely, doesn't harm the trees, doesn't harm the surrounding animals, wildlife, or us, which is good, because some of the fungicides are kind of nastier.
Right.
The challenge is because the directions normally on a fungicide say to spray every time or after it rains, or every time you expect rain within 24 hours. So you can imagine that that's kind of a, you're going to be doing an awful lot of spraying.
Yeah.
So if you're going to have to spray, then the that would be the better choice to use.
Right.
Something like that, which is safe and is cheap too.
Yes, exactly. That's a good point. And then, so as far as fertilizing, if you're newly planting trees, what's the best way to get them kind of launched?
Yeah, you normally do not want to do much fertilizer in the hole. The tree's going to have to get used to what you've got, getting your tree, loosening up the soil you have where you're planting your tree, making sure that it has good drainage. That's the key. Mm. You know, you're not going to, you don't want to plant them in straight muskeg. It's going to be too wet, too cold, not the best situation for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the main preparation. So maybe if you can see in a 4 to 6 foot wide circle and a foot deep, if you mix some sand into there or make raised beds, I don't know if you have access to good, decent topsoil there, figuring on 1 to 2 yards of topsoil, cubic yards of topsoil for a tree. This is well drained, sandy mix. So, again, I don't know what's available to you. You know, the recommendation is like 1 part sand to 2 parts muskeg or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got a little bit of compost, you can use some of that. But again, on the surface is usually the best place for it.
Mm.
And get your tree planted. Make sure the grafted area, that you'll see normally a crook in the tree stem where it was grafted together. Usually you want that graft area to be above the final soil surface.
Gotcha.
Then once you get your thing planted, watered in, and if you want to put some compost on the surface that the rain and the water will leach down in, and you can add some seaweed would be good around it, mm-hmm. and really keep the weeds away from the tree. Keep it 3 feet away from the tree so that weeds aren't going to be competing mm-hmm. with the tree roots for the nutrients that are there. And then in coming years after that, you can use a little sprinkling of fertilizer, or you can use, you may have seen trees, they call them fertilizer spikes, or granular fertilizer, or you can poke holes around the drip line of the tree again to put a small amount of fertilizer and more each year as they grow.
Mm-hmm.
Stake them, water them, and keep them watered keep them watered. You figure the tree is supposed to, should have, if Mother Nature doesn't provide it, figure at least 1 inch of water a week.
Mm.
So if you've got your bucket out there and you aren't getting an inch of rain a week, then you're going to have to supply it.
Yep. Those are good tips, definitely. And if you're out there listening, caller, I hope that answers all your questions. Probably does. And so maybe on that note, we can slide over to Dave, who has a question about roadies.
Okay. Well, I do want to talk about trees for a minute.
Oh yeah,
I've got one deciduous tree that's got a lot of moss on the bark. The whole tree is covered with moss. Is there a way?
That's not a surprise. My roof, your roof, sometimes my truck gets moss on it. Our lawn, the driveway, the sidewalk. This is a great place to grow moss. And next question is probably, should you be concerned about it? Or do you want to remove it? And you can gently use something like a scrub, a plastic scrub brush, and kind of gently rub on it. Try not to, you know, scrape through the skin, scrape through the bark down to the green stuff underneath there. We don't normally have, there isn't really a spray as such to use, although the baking soda being rather alkaline, you could actually spray that on the bark, and that would probably kill some of the moths at least. But just rubbing it off or peeling it off if it comes off easily. And lichens, again, the lichens, which are the gray and various different colors, also are common on the tree. And, of course, the old, the big spruces and hemlocks have the what looks like the old man's beard hanging from them, too, which is another lichen. So if you can take it off easily, go for it.
Okay. All right. Well, those are some good ideas. Now, on the roadie subject, I've noticed around the fire hall here in Petersburg Station 1, there are probably 20 roadies around that building. There are a couple of them that have one or two very large buds on them that are almost ready to flower. The rest of them all have a very small bud that doesn't even look like it's going to grow this year or bud this year.
Okay.
And I'm curious, curious why there would be a difference on one bush where you've got one or one maybe large bud and then none others.
So a couple of reasons why, and one of the reasons why there may well be fewer buds this year than last year is we can blame it on last summer's, well, or lack of summer. You know, not much, very little sunshine and gloom, you know, just generally gloomy weather, which results in trees and shrubs storing less food in their roots, which then, of course, leads the following season to less flowers and or less fruit also. Location makes a difference. So you may have some roadies that get more sun that will tend to encourage them to have, in the brighter areas will tend to have more flowers than those in the shadier areas. But on a particular, I think you were also asking, this was on a particular one bush or several bushes that have just a few flower buds and then mostly just leaf buds, the more pointed buds on them. Is that right?
Yeah, there's some, yeah, there are quite a few that have the real pointed buds, yeah.
Yep. So what you can do, there isn't anything you can do to get more flowers for this year, but you can help them out by at least getting the rhododendron food, rhododendron fertilizer now, and sprinkle that around or gently scratch it in around those plants for this year, and then hope also that we have more sunshine this year. That would help so we get more flowers next year. So again, because the new flower buds will be forming about the time or just after the normal flowering time for the rhododendrons. So that's what we're aiming for. Yeah, you know, pray for sun, I guess, or do whatever sun dance we can because we want more summer this summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why they call it summer.
Yeah.
Yes.
I want summer of it.
Some years, yeah. Some years than others. And the other thing, too, you can do as far as liquid, if you're doing a liquid fertilizing program, is it's called using Miracid as opposed to Miracle-Gro. Same company makes it, but it is more specifically for rhododendrons. The fertilizer you would be looking for, again, is going to be a rhododendron and evergreen fertilizer that you would want to use around these trees or shrubs.
Mm.
And the packages, the box or the bag should say, based on the size, if the rhododendron is 3 feet across, you use so much. If it's a 5 foot diameter plant, then you use some more, logically, and do the sprinkling around.
Sure.
You've got shallow roots, so you don't want to really dig or scratch too deeply, but maintain the mulch around them, keep the weeds from growing around them also. That's worthwhile.
Okay, and someone told me something about Epsom salts, spray or sprinkle.
Yep. If you look at your rhododendrons and you look at the neighbor's rhododendrons and somebody else over here, Some of them may look very nice and green. Some may look rather yellowish this time of year. And the Epsom, it's worth giving them some Epsom salt or the magnesium in them, which will help the rhododendron leaves turn more green. And not very much. It's something on the order of a quarter to half a teaspoon to a gallon of water. And something like that amount, a gallon, or at most two, for maybe a really big rhododendron. And this, well, yeah, we aren't that much for rose growing around here, but Epsom salts are good for roses, too.
Okay. Those are good tips. All right. And I hope that answers your question, Dave. And, yeah, I think so. All righty. Well, I think he may have disconnected there, which is just fine. Got the question answered. And we have, you know, our next show up here is Lars, and he's ready, but he's in the studio with me right now, and I believe he does have a question for Ed Bajarski.
Yeah, hi, Ed. I got two quick questions.
Okay.
One, I'm thinking about hanging bird feeders around my fruit trees. Can I hang them in the fruit trees, or should I hang them next to them?
I'm not sure. I guess I'm going to ask, why do you want bird feeders in your fruit trees anyway, to start with?
Oh, we got a ton of birds around our yard, and we have no bees to speak of around here, so I was hoping that would help with the pollinating.
Yeah, probably not. Well, I mean, if you're going to put anything out there, I would say hummingbird feeders would probably be the best thing, as opposed to not bird seed feeders. For a couple of reasons. One thing is that some birds, the jays in particular, once the apples start to form, well, and cherries too, as far as that goes, will also feed or peck on the newly forming fruits. So you wouldn't necessarily want to encourage them. And the other thing is that the birds you attract might potentially want to eat what bees you have, which are trying to do the pollination, where at least hummingbirds would be more likely to help you there. In Juneau, at least, we can't, we don't want to have bird seed feeders in our fruit trees, partly because we got so many bears that they like bird seed too, and then they go right from the bird seed right to the, from the seed to the fruits.
Yeah.
Anyway, we want to avoid that.
Yeah, so I meant hummingbird feeders. I shouldn't have said bird feeders.
Okay.
And my other question is, I got my sunflowers going out in the yard, and I read where it's okay to stake them and help them so they stand straight up. I tried doing that before, and I killed too many of them. What's an easy way of tying them to the stake without hurting them?
Oh, okay. something to use that works, and this kind of applies even to tying up trees, really, because you want to be careful not to do damage to the trunks of the trees also, just like, to your tall flowers. Is use a soft material, and whether this might be strips of old T-shirt material, pantyhose, old pantyhose works nicely because, again, it's a soft material. And you kind of tie them fairly loosely, so that they have a little bit of room to sway back and forth in the breeze, but that they're not tied too tightly, rather than using, say, some kind of twine that might cause them some damage. So you want a loose, whether it be a loose trellis or like something like that, when you're going to tie them up.
Okay, yeah, because I don't have very nimble fingers, and I was looking for a real easy shortcut for something to loop around.
Yeah, so something like that. Yeah, I mean, tear some old strips of old T-shirts, that's soft material, and get something that's a couple feet long, or cut it or tear it, whatever works for you. And that soft material is going to be usually better for tying up stuff like that. I mean, and of course, another thing we will have that will need tying up are things like delphiniums, by June when they're up there 3 feet tall or so. And same thing applies because sure as heck, when the flowers start to open, we get wind and rain, and away it goes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thanks, Lars. And then we just got one more caller here, too. Let's see here.
I've got to call in my back. I've got to answer this one because I think it's my wife calling. So hang on just a moment, please.
Okay, I'll dial you down here a little bit. Hey, Lars, how's it going?
Oh, I went and planted the rest of my potatoes today. About did myself in.
Yeah, well, it's a good day to do it, but that's quite a labor.
Oh, yeah, my knees just can't do it anymore.
You got to pace yourself, you know.
Okay. So what do we got? Last little bit here, Orin.
Okay, here we go. Our last caller. You there on the line, caller?
Yeah, hey, it's Andy Kittles. One quick thing on the baking soda treatment for fruit trees. How and when do you apply it?
I'm sorry, what you said applying what for fruit trees?
That you said baking soda for apple scab?
Okay, so for a fungicide, you would actually could start now and spray the stuff on about every week, let's say once a week again, and eventually you will be hitting, probably stop briefly while they are flowering, but then again start up again once the flowers fall off. So again, the key that you're trying to stop here is primarily the scab organism, the fungus that can be a problem, and do that right up until, well, the last, normally most of our apples will be ripening from early September into early October. So you could probably quit around mid-August or something like that.
Okay, that sounds great. What kind of mixture should it be?
So in a 1 gallon sprayer, you would use about, let's see, a quarter cup. Normally it's a tablespoon to a gallon, to a quart. So you would need about a quarter of a cup to a gallon of water, and you want to add a few drops of liquid soap because that will help suspend. You got to keep shaking it because some of the baking soda will dissolve, but some of it will not. So you got to kind of keep shaking it to keep it in suspension. So the couple drops of liquid soap will help with that.
Okay, and a liquid soap like Joy or Dawn or anything?
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Okay. Anything else to put in there? I've read things about copper.
There's some people
sulfur.
Will even add some Tabasco sauce to try to discourage some of these little insects on occasion. But that's generally all I would use. The other thing you could add is a couple drops of vegetable oil in there.
Okay.
Again, and that helps make it a little bit stickier on the tree. So you get the soap and the oil and the baking soda, and hopefully you have less scab that way.
Okay. And if scab does appear, it should be removed right away and try and cut some
branches
off?
It's going to be on, once you see it and it forms on both leaves and on fruits, it's not removable. It grows into the fruit and into the leaves. So this is trying to be a preventive, and it kills the spores when they land on those moist leaves or fruits.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ed.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. And I know, Ed, you've got daylight's a burning. You got lots of work to do. You're going to go out there and get those trees going yourself.
Well, until next time.
Okay. Thanks so much. And thanks all the callers and everybody for lots of great questions. We always learn a lot when people bring that kind of applicable, urgent, need to know situation onto us. So thank you very much again, Ed.
You're welcome.
All
bye.
Right. Yes, indeed. That was In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski. We appreciate him very, very much. And we also appreciate the Flower Farm for underwriting this program. They've got fuchsia baskets, pansies, violas blooming, and they accept orders for custom baskets, hanging bags, and planters. They've got gift certificates and bouquet subscriptions available. And they're out there at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing, every day 10 to 4 except Wednesday. And then Tuesday through Saturday, they're also at the Garden Center behind Love and Matters in downtown Petersburg. And that's good stuff. And this is Member Drive Week. So things are going great here at the station. Donations are coming in, and the most exciting thing of the day for me was that the Rasmussen Foundation got in touch with us, And Chris Norris was in here earlier, and she let us know that Rasmussen is challenging the community of Petersburg by doing a one-to-one matching grant up to $2,500. So we really need to rise up and accept that challenge, and we've had some donations coming in doing so, and we have the rest of today and tomorrow to make use of that generous offer, and we've really got to do it. So I want to thank a few people who have done just that. Randy and Judy Henderson made a gift today, and they left this comment saying, local, state, and NPR news, the community service announcements, Tom and Angela, Joe, Julie and Oren, and all the staff and volunteers, they just appreciate those aspects of KFSK, and that feels great. Mara Sullivan did a pledge today, and her pledge was doubled by the Rasmussen Foundation, as could be yours. She left this comment. Having grown up with the familiar sounds of KFSK for the past 22 years, it is always a comfort to hear the voices and programs of my youth. Tradio, Rising Tide, and my NPR favorites, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Car Talk, Prairie Home Companion, kept me company while attending college. Thank you for all that you do, and always remembering my birthday. My goodness, that is lovely. Thank you for that gift, Mara, and those great comments. And her member donation today was matched by Rasmussen Foundation, one-to-one, and yours can be, too. Andy Kittums, he contributed today. Chris Lopez made an additional gift because he was inspired by Rasmussen Foundation, matching it and just doubling the value of the gift. Mary Compass did the same just now during this program, and she called in to say, keep it up. Local and national news, Saturday's programming, volunteer DJ variety, and a great staff. Those are the things she values about KFSK. And it just feels great. I love the member drive because it's just very inspiring to see that show of support from the community. And today and tomorrow, we've really got to take advantage of this generous gift from Rasmussen Foundation. They're just amplifying the community's giving. One-to-one match, you can double the value of your gift to KFSK during the spring drive, thanks to that challenge, matching challenge. So, my goodness, thank you so much to them. And with that, we're going to hand things over to fledgling gardener and high country superstar Lars Christensen.
Nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a bit. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
So maybe while Lars is getting set up here, I just kind of sprung it on him. I was like, it's your turn, Lars, get in there. I just want to let you know that now is a really great time to call on in and make your member pledge. Tom is within arm's reach of a telephone. I can see him through a window. He's ready. He's ready. So the number to call to get him on the horn and make your pledge, 772-3808. Now's a great time. If you're not by a phone, but you're by a computer, or you just prefer to do it yourself through your mobile, go for it. You can do that now, too, kfsk.org. And there's a big old red Donate Now button. And I think it'll work great. You're going to love it. Feels really good to give a gift to public radio because it means you're giving a gift to your whole community. So, and now